I call Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Wednesday, March 25th, 2015. Let the record reflect that it is 3:33 p.m. Committee members present, Vice Chair Senator Costello, Senator Stoltz, Senator Machicki, Senator Coghill, and myself, Senator Giesel. I believe that Senator Walikowski will be joining us later. Senator Stedman is excused today. In the audience, we welcome Representative Chenault, Representative Johnson, and Representative Hawker. So welcome. Recording Secretary today, thank you, Ann, for helping us out again. Cody's got the audio over here, and he's managing all of the phone calls for public testimony. And thank you to Ikey, who is the committee staff. So today we're hearing House Bill 132. To start things off, I will invite the bill sponsor to the table. Actually, it's the House Labor and Commerce Committee, but main sponsor is that. Excuse me, that's the CS. The main sponsor is Representative Chenault. So, welcome, Mr. Speaker.
Madam Chairman, for the record, I'm Representative Chenault. I represent District 29 on the Kenai Peninsula. Madam Chairman, before you today, you have House Bill 132. Which affirms the policy direction for the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation. The legislature set the, The legislature set this policy direction in 2013 when we created AGDC, and also again in 2014 when we approved AGDC's involvement with the Alaska Natural Gas Pipeline project in conjunction with the passing of Senate Bill 138. HB 132 recognizes that AGDC is already engaged as a partner on behalf of the state of Alaska in the LNG project, which is the project we believe is the most likely to deliver the greatest benefit to Alaskans. Because AKA LNG project is most likely to deliver the greatest benefits, House Bill 132 ensures that AGDC maintains its commitment to the project and does not embark on a duplicative competing project until the future of the AK LNG project is more certain. Per House Bill 132, AGDC would be free to pursue other projects at the earliest of three dates. Date number one is if a party to the LNG project withdraws. Number two would be if the Alaska LNG project proceeds to the front end engineering design, which is the FEED phase. And three, on July 1st of, if there's no agreement by July 1st of 2017, then they could also go forward. While the legislature and the legislation agrees that and recognizes that it's prudent for the state of Alaska to have a backup plan, the ASAP project, in case the state's partners in the LNG project fail to commit to the next development stage, should occur, AGDC is poised to resolicit gas buyers, gas and sellers, and upgrade the ASAP proposal as supported by the market. I won't read all the rest of it, but Madam Chairman, we know that the keys to mega project success include the elimination of competing objectives and the alignment of the stakeholders along a single project. With the unprecedented momentum to date of the aligned Alaska LNG project, having competing projects increases the risk and uncertainty of that success. This legislation ensures that AGDC retain the course set by the legislature in creating AGDC and providing a framework for AGDC to advance the state's interest as a full participant in the AKA LNG project. So, Madam Chairman, that's opening remarks. I do have Rena Delbridge with me, who is staff to Representative Hawker, and we will attempt to ask or answer any questions that you may have in regards to House Bill 132.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Representative Chenault. So before we go forward with Ms. Delbridge's going through the bill, I want to welcome Senator Walikowski to the committee. So Ms. Delbridge, if you would put yourself on the record and take us through the bill. Thank you.
Absolutely, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Rena Delbridge. I'm staff to Representative Hawker, working with Speaker Chenault on this legislation. You do have before you House Bill 132. Section 1 on page 1 is conforming, and that conforming change is made on page 2. Section 2 adds a new subsection to 3125.005, which is AGDC's statutory purpose. This section places a temporary restriction on AGDC's abilities by prohibiting AGDC from developing a natural gas pipeline project in which more than half of the gas transported in that project is intended for export as LNG. And it also prohibits AGDC's involvement in a liquefied natural gas project that would compete with the Alaska LNG project that AGDC, the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation, is already contractually involved in. These prohibitions would terminate at the earliest of three dates. The temporary prohibition would go away at the time at which the state or other AKLNG parties that have contractual rights to gas withdraw from the AKLNG party project, or at that point in time in which the state and the other AKLNG parties progress the project into the next phase, front-end engineering and design, or FEED, and then as a final backstop, July 1st, 2017. Section 3 adds a new section to AGDC's power and duties, and this simply requires that before marketing gas, AGDC needs to have written consent from the entity that controls or owns that gas. It does not prohibit AGDC from marketing. The legislature created statutory authority for them to create a marketing subsidiary at some point in the future if DNR or other resource controllers ask them to help market that gas. Section 4 amends 3125-100, and that's the In-State Natural Gas Pipeline Fund, to, again, make sure that AGDC uses those monies only for a project that does not compete with the AKLNG project, and they cannot use it for a gas pipeline project if the majority of gas is intended for export. These restrictions as well expire at the earliest of the same three dates. Section 5 amends AGDC's definitions so that the statutory reference in the definition of Alaska Liquefied Natural Gas Project reflects the addition of the new subsection in 3125.005. Section 6 adds a new term to the definitions in AGDC statute, as we're now referencing front-end engineering and design as a project phase. We are also adding that definition to the legislation. That definition replicates the language that's in the heads of agreement for the AKLNG project. That was dated 2014 and was entered into between AGDC, the state, BP, Conoco, TransCanada, and Exxon. And then Section 7 sets an immediate effective date. If the committee has questions on the legislation, I'm happy to provide what answers I can.
Great. Thank you very much. So, committee members, questions either for Representative Chenault or Ms. Delbridge?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Coghill.
And you probably already said this, but on page 3, under line 7 there, the first withdrawal requirement was from the natural gas project in A5, that's the heads of agreement, is what I take?
Senator Coghill, through the chair, the project that's referenced as an Alaska liquefied natural gas project described in A5, A5 would be the existing AGDC statute, 3125.005A5, that directs AGDC to participate in the Alaska LNG project.
Okay, so the date kind of got me, and I went back to get that, and so it's the whole, it refers to that whole statute. Got it. All right.
Yes, sir.
All right, that helped me.
Further questions? Well, let me ask one then, Representative Chenault. So what purpose are you hoping this legislation will serve? What is the intent?
And Madam Chairman, I think the real intent is to make sure that the legislature's issues are protected. We've got roughly $180 million to $200 million sitting out there in the fund. We have given direction to AGDC since they were incorporated that that we don't want to see them doing duplicated services. And, that is part of, that is probably one of the main reasons that we're looking at that, Madam Chairman. We are currently partners in, 25% partners in the AKLNG project. Competition is seen as bringing uncertainty to a project that that we think will go forward. I think it's been reported to you, and I know certainly to our House Resource Committee by all the partners in the AKLNG project that they are on time, on schedule, and moving ahead. That's also the information we get back from our DNR committee. Madam Chairman, I personally don't want to see us get in the way of that project. I don't want us to be the reason that one or more of those, that project goes away. And I think this keeps some of that from happening. I think that stops the issue of competition out there. And some may say, and some you may hear say later, that this is not competition, but that's not how it was proposed. And I think we've given AGDC the right direction to go. Some will get into talking about, is this the right size line? Madam Chairman, today we don't know what the right size line is if we use this AGDC as a backup. We don't know what that line size is. So money that we would spend on upsizing pipe, do we know if that's the right size? Do we know if that's the right PSI? Do we know if that's the right volume of gas to move? Today we don't know that. And so it causes me concern in the times that we live in with declining production and declining revenue that we want to just go out and spend money just to say that we've got a backup plan. We know that the 500 million cubic foot limit that was placed upon AGDC back when it was passed was because of AGEA. We know that in our deliberations on Senate Bill 138 that we've gotten rid of that. So we know that we can upsize that line at a time and at a time that we need to. My concern is that what's been proposed out there since the beginning of session has been a competitive line. And, it's not a backup line. If we go to into competition with ourselves, really makes no sense at all to be spending money on both projects. So I think that that's some of the reasons why, that the bill was introduced. And, we're looking for clarification.
Very good. Senator Wanikowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I didn't support HB 4, I didn't support HB 138, but I respect the democratic process, and I agree that I think with most all Alaskans and everybody on this committee, we want to see a pipeline, and so how do we get there now? And there's competing visions, and I appreciate your perspective that. Having a competing line maybe introduces some uncertainty. I also, on the other hand, can appreciate the perspective that going through an ugly legislative battle, which we're halfway through, and possibly a legislative veto or governor veto, just creates more market chaos and more market issues. So, I'm just wondering, is it possible at this point for all of us to sort of step back from the ledge and come up with a solution to that we can all agree on, and maybe that involves all of us giving up a little bit. And I know you have very strong, passionate feelings about it, and you've been a very good advocate for your gas line. And I have probably a different philosophical bent than you on this and many other issues. But is there a way that we can come up with some sort of a way that we can all just step back and come to some agreement so that we're not sending this message to the marketplace that we're all fighting? And I don't think it sends a good message if you have 39 or 40 legislators out of 60, three-quarters, two-thirds of the legislature, I don't know that you get a veto override, but I just don't think that sends a good message to the market. Is there any sort of compromise that you can envision that maybe the governor gives a little, maybe you give a little?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, it's exactly what we're looking for. We haven't come to that yet. But we feel strong enough about it that we need to continue moving forward. My hope is at the end of the day that the governor, the administration, and AGDC and the legislature do come to an agreement. You know, I can tell you the last thing I really want to do is fight with the governor. Last thing I want to do is waste the legislature's time on moving a bill forward, but there's a number of us that think strongly enough about the message that was sent that we have to try to do what we can to control the message that we send out. At the end of the day, I'm hoping that we can come to that agreement. I'm willing to talk about it. I'm willing to give a little. But I'm not willing to give up the opportunity that we have before us today, which is the AKLNG project, that we are farther ahead on a gas line project in the state of Alaska has ever been. And whether you trust, whether you like the oil companies or not, the oil companies are our partners. And in order to get a project of this magnitude, with all the hurdles that are involved there, our partners have to agree that we're in it 100% too. And so that's the message that I want to send, is that I'm supporting AKLNG. I think it's the project that does bring Alaska the biggest benefit, but I'm also willing to work with the administration and see if we can't figure out where we can move forward with some aspect of maybe what the governor wants, while assuring that the legislature's concerns are met also. So I think we're a long way from the finish line. Last thing I want to do is override a governor's veto. Doesn't look good for him. It doesn't look good for us. Or if we don't override his veto, doesn't look good for him. It doesn't look good for us. So at the end of the day, the hope is that by continuing to discuss this issue, maybe we can come up with a plan to move forward. Because I probably shouldn't do this. This is how much I know about the plan that the governor has. That's how much I know, unfortunately. I've heard a lot. I've talked with AGDC. I've talked with board members. I've talked with the administration. I've talked with our DNR folks. But there's no clear, concise plan out there right now that I'm aware of. And that's where I want to get to. Madam Chairman.
Thank you very much, Representative Chenault. Senator Machicki had a question.
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Chenault or Ms. Delbridge, whoever answers this question. 138 was a hard-fought battle, and 52-8 is a pretty clear message. And I do view this as you asking the governor to step back and come to the table. But the question I have, and you know, consistency is key, particularly with the regulatory agencies, FERC, DOE, we need to stay down this path, and it's certainly my goal. I remember the meetings of talking about what our plan would be to expand ASAP, if that's the case, if we end up having to step back to the number two plan. So the question specifically, could you, just for Alaskans that may be wondering, how do you define competing with ourselves? What are the limits of where AGDC and the ASAP project would compete with AKLNG, so we understand the clear lines?
Senator Machicki, through the chair, the sponsors have initial concerns and thoughts that way, but without additional clarity on what ASAP might become under a new plan, it's difficult to be too precise. We do know that that the governor expressed a desire to have parallel projects of generally the same size. Both would terminate in an LNG facility, and that they would keep going at the same time until they reached FID, or a final investment decision, at which point the one that delivered the benefits to the state that haven't been fully articulated yet, but that meet with the state's approval, would get the state's full support. I think that indicates a sense of competition. I think that the concerns are the uncertainty and the risk that competitive nature puts into place. There leads to uncertainty among regulators. The Army Corps of Engineers has already put a pause on its work on the ASAP Supplemental Environmental Impact Statement while they let any redrafting of that ASAP line until they know what that looks like. If it's actually turned into an LNG project, the EIS very well may not be under their jurisdiction, but under FERC's jurisdiction. So there's confusion right now with regulators. There's a lot of potential for market uncertainty. If, in fact, we are trying to reach an FID, a final investment decision, all of your contracts for gas sales need to be in place before then. And yet it would seem then that there are two different projects that presumably would carry the same people's gas that need to go out to the market at the same time and try and secure commitments. Not only may that be confusing to the markets, but I think it also presents potentially an opportunity for the markets to leverage the state's two projects against each other and potentially drive down the price that the state at least ultimately receives for its gas. One could envision easily the markets holding off on a full commitment on one until they know a little more about what they want, and then going a little more with the other one. And it's difficult to see a good situation emerging from that for the state that wants very much the highest possible price for its gas to maximize the value of its resources. There's other uncertainty as well. There's, I think you referenced the SB 138 deliberations, 51 hearings in the legislature. It was intense, and I think one of the key messages was how crucial proper alignment of all of the resource owner parties is to the success of a project coming together. And 138, of course, laid that framework for the state to participate as an equity participant with a commensurate volume of gas to run through that line that truly aligned all of those parties. Without more details on the new plan, it's hard to say the state and the resource owners can be aligned in it. It's difficult to imagine the resource owners investing additional money in a separate project when they have committed their interests to the AKLNG project. There's then further the risk and uncertainty within the state. If we are having two state projects and asking them to compete against each other, the state's in a unique position wearing a variety of hats to pick a winner or a loser without really waiting for the end. There is the chance of unfair advantage to one project or the other if anyone wants to pick that winner and try and make that happen. In particular, there are special terms granted to an ASAP pipeline under House Bill 4 that give it preferential and priority treatment for permits and authorizations and other things like that from the state. That's potentially not a level playing field for two parallel projects marching on to FID. So those are some of those concerns.
Follow up?
I may follow up, and I'll simplify the question for sort of more the answer I was looking for, and I apologize, I probably didn't ask it well. On page 4, line 10, sort of give the definition of what you call competition under this bill. I think it starts with the words the corporation may not expend money. Isn't that sort of just a concise, what you're calling competition is an in-state natural gas pipeline through which 50% of the gas is intended for export by the corporation or another party? Is that what you're calling competition in this bill?
Senator Michicki, through the chair, the sponsors had to somehow define what a competing pipeline might be. And under respecting the need for the state to maintain a viable backup in-state option, like ASAP, the export limit was a logical place to turn to.
Excellent. Thank you.
Good. Further questions? Senator Costello?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Chenault, many Alaskans, I feel, I know, because my mother-in-law is one of them, they see this really as just a disagreement between, you know, the third floor and the legislature, or maybe even the Senate Bill 138. And can you talk about what this really is about, what's at risk, what's at stake, and why you believe that this legislation is necessary?
Thank you, Representative Costello, or Senator Costello, through the chair. You know, I believe it's about supporting the pipeline project that we feel is most likely to succeed. And as I said before, that's the AK LNG project. You know, I know earlier Senator Wilkowski talked about not everyone necessarily agreed with House Bill 4 or agreed with Senate Bill 138. That doesn't necessarily make them bad people. Just we have different of opinion on how to actually move forward on a project. We see this project moving forward on time, on schedule, on budget. Why do we want to inject any uncertainty into it? And you know, I would be the first to say that if they were waffling on the project, if things weren't moving along, then we need to look out for our interests. But I think that the legislature, by passing this legislation, is looking out for the Alaska state interests. I think that it's the project that is most likely to succeed. And when we talk about a backup plan, you know, if AK LNG did go away, if for some reason it went away, you know, the first thing that we don't want to do is just go out there with another plan. I think the first thing we would need to do at that time is determine why did AK LNG fail? Why could three of the biggest producers in the world, in the state of Alaska, with all their interests aligned, why could we not put together a project? I think that would be the first question that we'd really need to ask ourselves if AK LNG did go away, before we tried to move forward on any type of new project. That would be probably the best thing that the state of Alaska could do. And don't get me wrong, I'm as frustrated as most Alaskans are that we don't have gas to Alaskans, that Fairbanks is still not quite in the dark, but they're in a cold anyway. You know, but I haven't controlled those market prices. I haven't controlled the market. What I know of is that for the last 6 years minimum, that a number of us in this room and elsewhere in this building have been working toward a big pipeline project that brings Alaska's resources to Alaskans first and to export. We know that there's got to be the export component because the size of gas, or the amount of gas that Alaskans use, is fairly trivial in the big picture. There's just not much gas. And how we provide it cheaper to Alaskans is by putting together a big project. We've got all the people, all the, you know, we've got three of the biggest partners in the world. The Save Alaska is aligned. And that project is moving forward. And as I stated earlier, I don't believe that we want to inject any uncertainty into this project to make it. I don't want to give people an excuse to go. And with today's oil prices at $40 or $50 a barrel, there's projects all over this world that are being shut down. Not only oil finds, but also gas projects. We still have our partners investing hundreds of millions of dollars. They still have their A-team here working on a project. They've invested billions of dollars, actually, in a piece that will make this project go, and that's Point Thompson. And I don't believe that they're doing it just for show. I believe that they're honestly out there looking, trying to put together a project that brings Alaska's gas to market. And if we inject this uncertainty into it, then this project may go away, and it may be years before we see another one.
Thank you.
Further questions for Speaker Chenault or Ms. Delbridge? Yes, Senator Michiki.
One of the things, I mean, people like things that are somewhat graphic, right? It's hard for us to think about the conceptual, but if you lived in our district, and I share a district with the speaker, and I'll ask him to round out my comments, I guess, if he chooses to, but I will tell you right now that I believe that the project has purchased about 540 acres. There's work, the place is abuzz all the time. I know that level of activity is happening up and down the line. I welcome folks that have the time after the session is out to come down and see all the activity. I've not seen that level of activity. Well, I've never seen that level of activity. And I don't know if the speaker wants to comment on that, but there's a lot going on. This is the real thing. I'm excited about this project, and that's why I'm supportive of the speaker bringing this forward, just again to have folks step back, come to the table, and talk about how to move forward together with one project and a reliable backup.
And Madam Chairman, you know, I'll talk a little bit about it. They have purchased 540, I believe, acres right now. I think they're looking for about 800. But does that mean that they're going to bring that project to Nikiski? No, it doesn't. I mean, they're committing to buy land, but, and I don't know what they've spent, but the amount of money they've spent is a small piece of an overall project, especially $65 billion, if that happens to be the number. A lot of buzz going on. A lot of folks in my district and districts across the peninsula, we're hoping that we've got the right deal put together. And I think it's imperative that we as the legislature make sure that we do everything we can to keep that on track. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You know, Speaker Chenault, you talked about projects that are being shut down, you know, the economics and so forth. How does ours rank compared to other projects in the world?
You know, Madam Chairman, I don't have a ranking system. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. I know that, you know, I think there's 17 projects up and 18 projects up and down the West Coast, mostly in B.C. Ours is a little bit different than most of those projects. Ours have the producers. Our project has the people with the gas, and they're the ones making the investment. A lot of those up and down the coast, what you're finding is the buyers are buying into those projects, not producers, but the buyers. And, you know, you can elaborate probably on why they're doing that. You know, they're getting into the market, whether they're going to, you know, pay for the LNG component or, you know, I haven't dug deep enough into those projects. But I think only one of our producers is involved in any of those projects. And you know, there's lots of reasons why that projects go forward, and lots of reasons behind the scenes that I don't see that they either do or they don't go forward. But you know, as I stated, we have the producers of the gas in partnership with the state of Alaska, and that's the alignment that you need to move a project forward. We tried a GEA, if you remember, and a GEA kept the producers out. And we've seen how far that went. Now, the marketplace changed on that, certainly, and that drove, you know, that drove to the close of that project. But that project, in my mind, wasn't going anywhere anyway. You've got to have the suppliers of the gas involved in any project of this magnitude, or I think you're just spinning your wheels. And so, as I said, we've got all our partners, DNR's on board, AGDC's on board, State of Alaska's on board, three producers are on board, TransCanada's on board. We've got the components in there to make a project work, and we ought to be doing everything we can and focusing our energy on completing a project that brings gas to Alaskans and it has the best opportunity to be successful.
Very good. I think Senator Coghill was next.
I asked earlier. Yeah,
okay.
No, I'm not in a hurry.
All right, Ken.
Nobody's leaving.
Senator Coghill.
Well, first of all, thank you for your tenacity down through the years. When we first started the discussion way back in, what was it, Hospital 128?
Well, House Bill 369.
369.
That's House Bill 9 and then House Bill 4.
And I think to the credit of the legislature, which I was reluctant at the beginning on to create a board forward to get gas to Alaskans. So I see the AGDC project as that was the primary issue. And of course, that was flying under the issue that we had with TransCanada going to South Central. I would only caution you at this point when we're speaking about the project, those people watching us probably hear us bouncing from one project to another. So the in-state gas line is what we worked on to try to make sure that there was a pipe available to Alaskans, that if no other pipe went, we could go to the producers and say, you have to produce that gas, and Alaska is the beneficiary first off. It seemed to me like that was our whole discussion. Whereas in getting our value for the gas on the North Slope at the larger level, the LNG project called the AK LNG was the best way to monetize that natural gas. And the question then was, do we get cash by way of royalty, or do we turn our gas into cash by selling it on the market? So we were fairly convinced at this point that we could sell the gas under this agreement where the pipeline, the conditioning, and the LNG plant were all one project, whereas the AGDC, as I understand it, is really a pipe project at this point with the possibility of an LNG plant.
LNG component.
And so So at this point, that's still a new addition to the in-state pipe, if I understand correctly, whereas the AKLNG pipe was considered as a whole unit. Your conditioning, your piping, you're going to liquefy it, put it in tankers, and sell it into the market. So they're very different projects, and so you said the project a dozen times here, and I'm afraid that people are going to hear the project and not be able to tell when we're bouncing from the LNG project, which is a very different deal, big volume, international market. And the state, then, the question for me as a Fairbanks kid is, do we get enough gas off there at the right price? Because I have to down pressure it, and I have to be able to get it into my market a little more expensively than I would if we just had a pipe that got gas without conditioning it from the North Slope. So for us in the interior, we kind of like the least expensive opportunity. That's going to be something that we're watching. But I think that's the danger of having trying to get monetized gas. We've now created a situation where I think we did push forward the industry by saying, we're going to build a pipe and you're going to fill it if you don't do something. And I think that's the right posture yet, because we're going to what they call the front-end engineering designing phase, which I think is this year, if I remember correctly. We're supposed to get to a place. So help me understand the project, the AKLNG project, which is the big international project, basically. What is it going to take at this point to get to that front-end engineering decision point? And what does that mean for those who are listening in on that project? What does that mean? And why would we hold this project up to see if they can get there? Just give me that big picture.
Mrs. Elbridge, before you bat clean up here and straighten out some of those things, I do want to make the committee aware that Dan Fowski is online to answer any questions if you need him. Ms. Elbridge.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Coghill, I think your assessment of the history of the two projects was very correct, and the motivations generally that most of you in the building had behind those. There is a concern with export-grade gas in a higher-pressure pipe that it may cost more to take it off at different points along the line. I think that's one of the factors in the new approach that
everyone is kind of waiting for more detail on as well, if that new in-state version becomes an LNG export line as well, you could have something of the same scenario. It depends a little bit on how and, yeah, what they will do that way. The FEED decision, front-end engineering and design, is expected in roughly second quarter 2016 on the AK LNG project. The FEED decision is essentially the project parties taking a look at the huge body of work and resource reports and data and preliminary engineering that they were able to do during the pre-FEED process here in the past 2 years or so, to take that to have some other more commercial and governing type agreements worked out among the parties, and to be able to look at that entire body and their internal marketing efforts to date individually and decide if the project was shaping up with that early work in such a manner that it warranted them moving forward into that next stage gate. Analytica, the legislature's consultants hired by LBNA, has an excellent overview of the various components that the AK LNG parties will want to have before them in order to evaluate and make a FEED decision. I'd be happy to forward that to the committee after the hearing. When they enter that FEED phase, it is still another couple years of fine-tuning the engineering and the studying, making sure that whatever other permits are in place are there. That is when you will go through, although the FERC EIS process has been initiated, that is when FERC will do the bulk of the permitting analysis and actually hopefully deliver a permit. That phase will take a couple years, and it requires a significant investment of up to, I think, $2.5 billion amongst all of the parties. It's a significant path forward. I believe during FEED, you also might be ordering some long lead time items for construction. You're really getting ready to go. FEED culminates in the FID, or the final investment decision, which is sort of that final stage gate that everyone can check off to make sure that things have gone as they needed to and we're comfortable actually going into construction. Does that?
Yeah, and I'm trying to keep it simple for those who I'm hoping are listening in. This is at the point where if you're going to buy a house, you put a down payment pretty much. And I mean, you start making some real investments at that point. And that's what, so this bill holds us at bay until we get to that point, is what I understand?
Senator Coghill, through the chair, I think that's a great analogy. When you go that step, you're clearly making a solid commitment to move forward, although you're recognizing that there are still I's to dot and T's to cross before you can actually have a deal absolutely done.
Good. I have 9 people online who wish to testify, so we're going to go to them in a moment or two. Senator Stoltz, you were next. Did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hopefully this is a real quick one. Been several references to the partners, producers, majors they've been referred to, and I assume they're all the same people. And I just wondered to what degree have they participated in the hearing process as entities? I see their representatives all around and might be opining things, but what's on the record is the most important to me, and maybe comment on that.
Senator Stoltz, through the chair. The other parties to AK LNG have not to date participated in the legislative process on House Bill 132.
And can you, just for the record, as the public's discussed, can you name those parties just for the record?
Senator Stoltz, through the chair, I'd be happy to. The parties involved in AK LNG are Exxon, Conoco, BP, the State of Alaska through DNR, AGDC, and TransCanada, excuse me. Exxon is the majority owner of the project at 33%. The state is the second highest owner at 25%. I believe that Conoco has around 22 and BP 21. I might be a digit off there.
Okay, thank you, Adam. No, I just wanted, I knew the partners, but often when we speak in code, when we say things like third floor, there's a lot of the public ask me, what do you mean by the third floor? And I try my best to on this one. It's a complex subject, and the players. I appreciate the indulgence of just getting that on the record that they haven't commented.
Good. I appreciate you bringing it to the record in the third floor. For the record, means the governor's office. Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, thank you. And I hope we get an opportunity to hear from the partners. I think it would be very beneficial to hear from BP, Conoco, Exxon, and TransCanada. We've heard a lot of speculation on both sides about, and I've heard the governor say, well, they said they'd do the exact same thing. And then I've heard other people speculate, well, no, they're saying the exact opposite. So I'd love to get them in where you're sitting and hear what they say. And do they like it? Do they think it's a bad thing? I think that's definitely important. I'd also like to hear from the DNR. I'd also like to hear from the governor's office. This is an important issue. I want to hear from, that's me personally, I want to hear from both sides. Let's vet it out and figure it out. But the point I do want to ask a question about is on Section 3. And setting aside, you know, the philosophical argument of do we want to stick with what we got? Do we want to have a competitor line? Section 3 gives me a little bit of heartburn. And it says the corporation may not market gas owned or controlled by any entity other than itself without express written consent from that entity. And unless I'm reading it correctly, I don't see any sunset date to that. And so my worry is if we pass this bill with that in there, and ultimately we do use AGDC to build the line, that's the language that's in there now. And so we're effectively giving veto power to the producers who don't own the gas but control it to veto the marketing of that gas, and that concerns me greatly. And could you address why that's in there and why that's important?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, I'd be happy to. AGDC, the entity that has the gas is the entity that is going to need to market it. AGDC as ASAP, that pipeline was always conceived as a transportation mechanism. AGDC under that framework never took possession of the gas, ownership of the gas. It simply took temporary custody to move it from one place to the next. And so the same type of principle applies. If somebody owns something, somebody else can't go market it to sell it at a price that the person that doesn't own it hasn't asked that person to go sell it for. Title is generally required, I guess, to sell something. So AGDC, under the old framework, whether in AKLNG or in ASAP, has never had title to gas. If DNR, who does carry the state's gas share, wants AGDC's assistance or for AGDC to set up an actual marketing subsidiary to make the deals and look for the potential buyers out there in the world, they can still do that. That's absolutely fine under this. Does that answer your question?
I could just follow up. Thank you. Am I correct? Because there's a duty to produce. There's a duty to market your gas. That's a legal obligation you have when you have when you take out a lease of our gas. And so are we saying, one of the majors decides, you know, we don't like the project, we don't want to market it, the state thinks it's profitable, the state thinks we can make a lot of money off it, but the producers say, no, we're just not going to market it, and we're not going to give you consent, thereby killing the gas line. I'm worried that we're giving up our legal right to enforce the duty to market. And am I reading that incorrectly?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, to my knowledge, the duty to produce is not necessarily a duty to market. I think there might be some differences as to how far that goes. I don't know that regardless you would have the ability to do that on their behalf. I think at that point if the state felt that they were unwilling and not following through on their lease commitments, they would potentially need other actions too. I would feel more comfortable, however, if you brought legal counsel up to follow through on that question related to duty to produce.
Thank you. Well, we do have 9 people on the phone wishing to testify, and so why don't we go to some public testimony. So members of the public who are on the line, what I'm going to do is rotate around the state. We have, let's see, 1, 2, 3 LIOs and some off-net folks, so to give everyone kind of an equal chance, we'll go from one LIO to the other. I'll be allowing 2.5 minutes for testimony. So if you would, at the beginning of your testimony, identify yourself and your affiliation and then give us your testimony. And we'll start with the Fairbanks LIO. A man named Merrick Pierce is there. Mr. Pierce, can you hear us?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Merrick Pierce. I serve on the board of the Alaska Gaslight Board Authority. I've been doing that for almost 10 years. Governor Walker has consistently explained the correct approach for getting a gas line bill. And, he's always said it needs to be a large diameter, economy of scale for LNG export, and the Alaska voters elected him governor. And with House Bill 132, we have a few legislators in the other party that are having a hard time accepting that Alaskans picked a new governor, one who knows how to get a gas line built, and they want to tie his hands. If House Bill 132 is passed, we have two options. We can either do a project that's not economic, or do a project that is controlled by those who have projects that compete with Alaska. And so the question really is, who should we trust, the governor or those who have consistently gotten it wrong? It's worth summarizing the record of some of these lawmakers. They overturned the Citizens Initiative on the gas line. They refused to adequately fund or support ANGDIT, whose 2002 statewide voter mandate was to develop a large Danmer gas line to tie water for LNG export. They insisted on studying a gas line project to Lower 48 that made absolutely no economic sense, wasted years of time and hundreds of millions of dollars. They insisted that we could do a bullet line that would cost over $8 billion, that would take gas to a place that already has a 200-year supply. And when the markets came to Alaska in 2012 and wanted first gas in 2019 from a deep water port, what was the response from some of these lawmakers? They said, well, we're going to start over. We're going to pick a new route to a shallow, ice-choked port. And instead of first gas in 2019, they said, we'll go for first gas in 2025. So the markets, they're saying Alaska's closed for business. You know, we all know that if you abuse your customer, they're going to go to the competition. In this case, the competition is Canada. I point out, too, that the Alaska LNG project has no contractual obligations. The HOA does not require any player to build anything and allows our so-called partners to develop LNG projects that compete with Alaska. With AKLNG, Alaska only gets a project if the global corporations who have projects that are competing with us decide to go forward. Exxon's job, its fiduciary obligation to its shareholders, is to maximize profits for its shareholders. And for Alaskans, that means they leave as little money in Alaska as possible and to warehouse the resources that they might compete with its other projects. You note, too, that the AKLNG partners through the Alaska Consortium have defrauded Alaskans with fraudulent tariffs and taps designed to limit no-slip competition and defraud us of billions of dollars in revenue. And in 2011 and 2012, when the markets came to Alaska and were looking for enough gas to build a gas line, the Exxon response was to ignore this development.
Mr. Pierce?
If Exxon really wanted a project built, they never would have ignored that significant development.
Mr. Pierce, your 2.5 minutes is up. Thank you for your testimony. If you would like to send in anything in writing, you can send it to my office, and it will be posted with a piece of legislation on the Internet. Next, we'll go to the Anchorage LIO. After that, we'll go to Kenai LIO. So the next person at the Anchorage LIO is Harold Heinz. Mr. Heinz, can you hear us?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity to offer some public comment today. Last night, Madam Chair, I sent you a copy of a personal opinion piece I had written in the Alaska Dispatch on this subject, dated February 24th. That piece represented myself, and I am here today representing myself. I have a few brief observations that I'd like you to consider as potential amendments improving on the House-passed version of HB 132. I'm a 40-plus-year resident of Alaska and have pipeline experience spanning a half a century. My experiences have been at both technical and executive levels in both the private and public sector. I followed the rebirth and development of the Alaska LNG project over the last few years. In SB 138, the 28th legislature firmly committed to the state's partner participation in the producer-sponsored pre-FEED evaluation of the Alaska LNG project. I understand that work is continuing under the associated agreements in preparation for a special legislative session this fall. In the House floor consideration of HB 132, on Monday night, strong reference was made to the fact that the legislature was the board of directors for the state participation in the Alaska LNG project. I agree and have actually made the same statement in my testimony before House Resources Committee. I hope this body will consider that role and its implications carefully. In particular, the project investment and participation decision you will be making this fall is one of the biggest and most important in Alaska's history. It is also a decision that risks major elements of Alaska's resource base and fiscal strength. Given the magnitude of the decision before the board, each member individually will be acting as a fiduciary and responsible to assure that he or she has exercised a high level of due diligence. My observation to you is that while much of this information has been gathered and generated, you as individuals still lack major information under several categories of importance to a fiduciary. The current instructions contained in HB 132 appear to narrow considerations that will be brought forward to the legislature and public. This legislation can be expanded to be a vehicle to signal the needs for fuller evaluation of rewards, alternative approaches, benefits, and alternative projects, and to make them publicly available for your decision rather than after.
Mr. Hines? Mr. Hines, thank you for your testimony. 2.5 minutes have gone by. Your article that you sent in to me this morning is already posted on the legislative website for the public to view, and committee members have it in their packet. So thank you for your testimony. Next, we'll be going to the Kenai LIO, and after that, we'll be going to the off-net to Reed Christensen. But first to the Anchorage, Kenai LIO, that's Bill Warren. Mr. Warren, can you hear us?
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, I'm Bill Warren, 65-year resident. I reside in Nikiski, and I'm retired out of the Pipe Fitters Local 367. I am against House Bill 132. I think it's unnecessary. I believe it's kind of a slap in the face to the governor, or whatever confusion is going on between the House and the governor ought to cease. This House Bill 132 is being watched all over the world, Wall Street, world markets, and this is really trashy. And it's really going to do us no good. It's going to come back and bite us. I think it also shows a point of weakness that we will do anything to secure Alaska LNG, even if it makes major concessions. Okay, HB 132 wants to put the ASAP on ice, neuter it, muzzle it, when we know that really to be a plan B, it should be up and running at curbside. AGDC should have the full configuration of pipe sizes and capacities they want, some data on their gas handling, and some data on their LNG component. We also know that there's many ways to skin a cat. There's a stage gate deal, four markets in one pipe that Alaska LNG has, and then there's an equally productive way, and it's the old netback way. So why are we going to settle just for one? And we don't try to take over Alaska LNG. We all have high hopes that it's going to go, but what are Las Vegas odds on that? 50% to go into feed? And why waste all this time till we go into feed when we could get AGDC up and running with a lot of information, a lot of things going for us? We should not cut ourselves off of this opportunity. And I'll get off here, but I'll stress again, this is a needless fight. This House Bill 132 should be put in the trash can, and everybody ought to act like mature people and settle this out without the whole world thinking we're fearful or whatever we are, you know. Thank you for letting me testify.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Warren. Next, we'll go to the off-net, and Reed Christensen is the first person on that list. Mr. Christensen, can you hear us?
Yes.
Welcome.
And the committee for the chance to testify today. My name is Reed Christensen. I'm the president of Dallenbaugh Corporation, a local manufacturing company specializing in oil field instrumentation systems. I'm also a constituent of Senator Wilikowski. Although beyond mutual desire to see more throughput in taps, we don't seem to see eye to eye on most issues, including this one. As part of my job, I'm able to interface with the people from the oil and gas industry on a regular basis, and I keep hearing the same thing. We did work for ConocoPhillips on their CD5 project, we're doing work for BP at Prudhoe Bay, and we're doing work for ExxonMobil at Point Thompson. And as we talk with these customers of ours, all three have repeatedly said the same thing about the potential gas line from the North Slope, that we as a state are closer than we have ever been, that we still have major work left to do, but that we also have never been this far along in making the project a reality. To hear this optimism from all three organizations gives me hope about my own future, and more importantly, about my children's future here in Alaska. A key component of the success of the project thus far has to do with the alignment of all the parties involved. I keep hearing that this alignment is what makes the project different this time around. The potential gas line shows us two things at the same time: how big our state is and how small we are. Geographically, it's such a huge state and a huge project. The volume of gas reserves on the slope are hard to comprehend. But when I look at the population and the local gas market in Alaska, we are tiny. I think that's why Fairbanks is so energy challenged. They simply do not have the customer base to justify the necessary capital spending to obtain the low-cost energy they need. In my opinion, the state as a whole is in the same boat as Fairbanks. We can't do it alone. The numbers did not pencil out. Hence the necessity for alignment with organizations that have the resources to allow the project to proceed while Alaska still gets a seat at the table. Sometimes we seem to want to sit at the table all by ourselves and eat all the food until we see how hard and how expensive it is to prepare the meal we are hoping to enjoy. I'd rather enjoy a feast with others rather than a bowl of soup by myself. Trying to set up a competing project at this point in time would be very counterproductive, if it is even possible. I heard in the news last night a legislator say that a backup plan for a freight train is not a pickup truck. However, the reality of our situation is that the state of Alaska by itself does not have the ability to build a backup freight train to a freight train by themselves. It would be better to align our resources to create an outcome in which the backup is not needed. To continue with the freight train analogy, how do we expect to be able to work with others to get a freight train we need, demonstrating our commitment and sincerity to the project while at the same time trying to build our own freight train on the side?
Mr. Christensen, your time is up.
Okay.
Thank you so much for your testimony. You can certainly send it in writing to my office, and we'll get it posted with the piece of legislation. Next, we're going to go to the Fairbanks LIO. After that, we'll go back to the Anchorage LIO. So in Fairbanks is Pamela Throop. Pamela, can you hear us?
Yes. Hello, Chairman. My name is Pamela Throop. I am a commercial real estate broker and a developer and a builder. I have lived in Fairbanks for 40 years. I oppose this bill. I don't think that we should tie the governor's hands. We should be looking at alternatives in case this doesn't work out, and to make sure that it's actually the best plan for the state. One of the things that I wanted to talk about today was a company that I know about because my brother-in-law works for it. It's called Chenier Energy, and they are in Houston, Texas. In 2010, in January, I was standing in his kitchen, and we were talking about the economy because it's been very important to me. It's obviously important to him. We were talking about gas. And he looked at me, and he said, Pam, we're building a plant in Sibon Pass, and we're selling gas. And I was incredulous, to say the least. He went on to tell me that his boss, the president, I believe, of the company, had gone to China and a year or two before, when the market had really fallen and they were, struggling, I presume, like the rest of the world was after 2008, and came back to the United States and got permission from Congress to sell gas to China and to build a train in the Sabine Pass. So since that time, now mind you, this is a short 5 years ago, they have built four trains in Sabine Pass. They're now building another facility in Corpus Christi. They have sold practically all the gas they can find to China and to Japan. They sold some to Conoco, and they've also sold some to India, which I've never heard anybody in the state talk about before. If a small company who doesn't own any gas can buy and develop a plant and sell it all over the world, I think we need to rethink what we're being told about the market. The market is out there, and we need to be positioned to go talk to the market. I asked him why they didn't come to Alaska, because we're closer, and we own our gas, and we need to sell our gas. And he told me that they did come to Alaska, and they got no reception here.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Troop. Your 2.5 minutes are up. If you would like to send in your testimony in writing, we'd be glad to post it on the Internet with the bill. Thank you for testifying. Next, we'll go to the Anchorage LIO, and then we'll go to the off-net again. So in Anchorage, we have Doug Smith. Mr. Smith, can you hear us?
I can hear you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. And I want to start by saying I agree with Senator Wilkowski. It would be nice if we could work together without legislative need, like House Bill 132, but it seems that that is where we are. The reality of it is that we need to maintain alignment. We are a business partner, not a competing entity. And I understand that people are looking for the producers to come forward and make statements. You know, I can't speak for the producers, but I can speak for service companies. We have been planning for investing and making adjustments to be meaningful participants in AKLNG. Right now, we're concerned that we're killing this project. So the producers have to be concerned the same. Whether they've come on record or not, that's up to them. But I will tell you that, you know, this does seem like our best viable option. We need to give it time to work. If it doesn't work, we have a backup plan. You know, at the half a billion cubic feet per day throughput, the ASAP seemed reasonable as a backup plan, but now we're talking about something that's four times that size and clearly stirs the concern of competition. You know, we need to stay the course, and we got two choices. Be the governor and the legislature who get your name on the plaque on the pipeline when it's built, or be prepared to have it on the tombstone when we kill it. You know, we need to have accountability in Juneau. So all the citizens need to know is who's going to be accountable if this competing approach kills this project. We need to stay the course, and if it needs House Bill 132 to stay the course, then I'm in support of it. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Smith. Next, we'll go to the off-net. George Pierce is the next person on the list. Mr. Pierce.
Yes, my name is George Pierce. I'm calling from Kosilov, Alaska, and I thank you for taking my testimony. HB 132 is a slap in the face of the Alaskans. It ties our hands, and the creator of this bill does not represent the Alaskans. We need a guarantee of a pipeline. We have had over 10 years of pipeline proposals introduced by the same legislators with no results. Our new governor is just making sure a pipeline is built, and the 24 members of our House that voted for that shows me that they will leave it up to the oil companies again. So vote no on this joke legislation. We need legislators that are representing Alaska, not oil companies. And what are the legislators afraid of? The competition. Mr. Walker is our new governor. And he's going to stop anything. He wants to make sure, he's not going to stop anything. He wants to make sure we get one built. The Japanese, LNG, they just had a conference with the committee there yesterday, and they made the comment of they are ready to buy gas from their Alaskans for over 40 years. They think cooking it, gas is not enough gas, and there's too many hurdles to get in there. They would prefer a large diameter line from Valdi to Valdi. Bill Walker said he would veto this bill. So if you're going to get in bed with the Alaskans, get in bed with them and not the oil companies. And that's what we're seeing here. The ASAP is cheaper, and it would serve all Alaskans and export more from Valdez, and it's ready to go. And the Alaskans voted for a large diameter two values. AK LNG line is not for Alaskan. It's a joke, and it costs too much. And now, with our incentives, we couldn't even buy that anyway. We don't have any money. We ran out of money thanks to our legislators. And the people that the Alaskans wouldn't even be able to afford this if it goes to the AK LNG project. So, and they are laying off workers right now. We are not partners with the oil companies. We are investors with only up to maybe 25% if TransCanada Pipeline allows it.
Mr. Pierce, your 2.5 minutes are up. Thank you very much for your testimony. And again, if you'd like to send that in writing, we'd be happy to post it with the bill. So the next person to testify is on the off-net in Fairbanks, Jim, and I'm probably going to mispronounce your last name, Plaquette?
Okay, yep.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Jim Plaquette. I'm a 41 member, year member of the International Union of Offshore Engineers, Local 302. I worked on the Trans-Alaska Pipeline when I was 18 years of age, and I remember workers that I worked with telling me after we build the oil line, we would build a gas line next. That was 41 years ago. After all these years, we have had many starts and stops. But today, the Alaska LNG project that the state owns 25%, we have come closer to a project than we ever have. But Governor Walker's plan with the state backup gas line plan seems to be in competition with the AK LNG project. I don't think it's smart to compete with ourselves. We're a 25% owner in the AK LNG project. Can our state afford to develop both projects? There are dozens of competing and cheaper projects to build a gas line in the world than Alaska's project. Why do we need to create another competing project for the same gas in Alaska and spend millions to study it to make the project that has a slim chance of going ahead more uncertain and possibly kill it? The only way an Alaska project makes it is the producers on board and paying 75% of the cost. House Bill 132 will allow the state to continue forward with the best chance to build the Alaska LNG project, and this is why I support HB 132. Thank you for letting me testify.
Thank you, Mr. Plaquette, for your testimony. So that completes the list of folks on the off-net, or excuse me, at the LIOs and the off-net who wish to testify. Is there anyone here in the room? Seeing no one, I will close public testimony on House Bill 132. So, welcoming back the bill sponsor, and Ms. Delbridge, if you'd like to make any additional comments. My intention is to hold the bill, and we'll hear it again on Friday, probably with some additional folks.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, again, I'm Representative Chenault from District 29 on the Kenai Peninsula. Madam Chairman, I didn't say something earlier, and I'm glad you brought us back up because I'd like to say it. Representative Hawker and myself created AGDC. It was a brainchild of a number of us and so I would be amiss if I didn't sit up here and tell you that I have all the faith in the world that Dan Fauske and AGDC can't put us together a pipeline project. That's what they were tasked for when we started this thing. Knowing all the constraints that we were under, we put together a group and we got out of the way. We put together a board of directors that was very knowledgeable. We had a Mr. Fauske and the team that he put together were bar none some of the best people in the world. We still have faith in Mr. Fauske and his team. So I'd be amiss if anybody thought that I didn't believe that we still have a good group of folks together, that if we have to and we have to fall back because the AKLNG project falters, that we have a group of people that are there together, that are ready to go to work, that can put together a project that may move Alaska forward. So I guess that's probably all I really wanted to say.
Well, you know, just to add on to that, Representative Chenault, I'm just reading the statute book here on AGDC, the Alaska Gasoline Development Corporation, for folks that don't know, and it's statute 3125005, the purpose. The corporation shall, for the benefit of the state, to the fullest extent possible, number one, develop and have primary responsibility for developing natural gas pipelines and Alaska Liquefied Natural Gas Project and other transportation mechanisms to deliver natural gas in-state for the maximum benefit of the people of Alaska. And then it goes on with other responsibilities, including export and other possibilities. I mean, that's their job, is to develop pipelines and develop the gas for the maximum benefit. So just to add on to what you commented. You know, one of the other things, a couple people mentioned the Alaska Port Authority. And I believe that was the group that now Governor Walker was working on. I know that you had mentioned not knowing what the governor's plan is. Do you have any thought that perhaps the governor is planning to change the plan to export from Valdez, or do you have any ideas at all, Representative Chenault?
And Madam Chairman, I have no idea.
Okay.
I would not put those words, you know, if you need that information, you should ask the governor. You know, I think that the governor is like all other Alaskans. I think that the governor truly feels that he wants a gas pipeline. He wants gas for Alaskans. He wants to have an export project. And I believe that when he says that, that is true. And so I believe, as he does, it's time to market Alaska's gas, maybe just a different way, you know, a different way of looking at it. I think that we have the best possible project before us right now, and we need to continue working with our partners to make sure that we get a gas line that does bring gas to Alaskans.
Anything to add, Ms. Elbridge?
No, Madam Chair, unless you have additional questions.
Any additional questions for Representative Chenault or Ms. Delbridge? Yes, Senator Chickie.
Just a comment, Madam Chair. I don't doubt that the governor's intentions are honorable. On at least two separate occasions in my district, he promised the folks of the Kenai that his drive was for a large diameter gas pipeline with a terminus in Nikiski. I expect that he intends to keep that promise, and he may just be looking at creative ways to get there, but I do think it's important that we give him the opportunity to step back and work together with these other two bodies toward something that works with AKLNG as the primary and clearly another project as the secondary. So, thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Senator Costello.
Thank you, and appreciate all the work through the chair that you've done on the gas line. I know when AGDC was put together and we were thinking long-term about the state's opportunity for a gas line, what did you envision the role of our governor would be?
You know, and I don't laugh lightly. I mean, you know, the governor is the administrator for the state of Alaska, and he's in charge of you know, helping, I would say working with the legislature to make sure that Alaska received the greatest benefit from the natural resources that we have. You know, people may argue about what does that really mean, but you know, I think that, you know, at the time, was the governor and the governor assisted in putting together AGDC. We have many knockdown, drag-out fights over AGDC that some people may not know about. When you start wordsmithing with lawyers and AGs and others, nothing bad, Senator Wilkowski. But, you know, there's lots of details that go into that, as you can tell by Ms. Delbridge's testimony. She's lived and breathed this thing for the last 4 or 6 years. And no different than Representative Hocker and myself have. And, you know, it's kind of like a kid, I guess, sometimes. You hope you're raising them right. And you know, and I think that the governor was, you know, the governor's been a big part of it. The governor will be a big part of any project that comes out of this, either legislature or comes to fruition, let's say through AKLNG. You know, he's going to be the guy that's negotiating for us. The department will be working on that too, but the legislature's going to have some input in that. And it's a two-way street. We've got to continue to talk, continue to negotiate for the things that we think are important. So, you know, I have faith in the governor. I think that, and I have respect for the governor. And I think that we need to work together.
Very good. Further questions? All right. Seeing none, thank you very much, Representative Chenault and Ms. Delbridge, for coming today. So this will conclude our meeting. The bill will be held over, and we'll address it again on Friday. Additionally, on Friday, if there's time, we'll take up a couple Senate bills, also which have been on the calendar for today but were delayed. So at this time, I will adjourn the committee. Let the record reflect that it is 4:54 p.m.